Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very 295th episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, a podcast about board games, and the people who love board games. I'm joined, as ever, by Matt Lees.
Hello.
And today, we're having ourselves a little treat, an explosive treat.
Oh, all this pick a mix. Oh, we've got all of these different little games we've played, and we've eaten them all, and oh, no, I'm too full. We need to get these pick-a-mix games out of our brains before we explode, Tom.
I'm really glad you said brains, because then you were like, I'm eating all this pick-a-mix
and I need to get it out of my body. I led you down that dirty path, and I knew I was doing it.
Horrible.
And the way your face turned as I said it, I'm hoping that happened to all of the listeners too. But don't worry, they're just in our brains, because that's where pick-a-mix lives.
That's right. It's the board game pick-and-mix brain explosion.
Absolutely. First of all, in our pick and mix explosion is Market Fresh.
Market Fresh,
a game which, to be honest, does look like an explosion of little sweeties.
It does.
This is a game by Michael Kiesling and Wolfgang Kramer, and published by Avalon Hill. And it is a game of stacking produce.
Little apples,
apples,
cherries,
fruits,
lemons,
guns. No guns.
Oh,
but there are some vegetables.
Oh,
it's a reimplementation of a game called Jubaku, I believe. Okay. It's basically a domino game where what you have is you have a little grid in front of you, which represents your market stall, I guess, and you have a small hand of dominoes in front of you. Except these dominoes are little plastic baskets that have little coloured plastic bits of fruit in them. Mm-hmm. You have them in front of you as a hand, and you always have three, and then on your turn, you can take another one. So it means you can choose to place one, take one, take one, place one. Right. It means you kind of always have a sense of what you've potentially got coming up, but you can also be like, I really don't want that one on the end. I'm just going to ignore it and hope that you never have to use it throughout the whole game. And then you're taking these dominoes, which have like sometimes very lucky, and they have like both sides have the same type of produce in them. But mostly they don't. Mostly it's like, hey, it's half strawberries, half onions. Completely normal. Bad smoothie. and then you're placing them on your grid, effectively. Now, there are some spaces on the grid that you can only cover up with a matching thing. So they'll picture of a strawberry in it. You have to put some straws on there if you want to cover it up. But otherwise, you can just put them however you like. There's no adjacency rules. You just go mad. Fill it up.
Great.
Amazing. And then when you do that, if you have more than two of a type of the same type of produce next to each other in this grid. Then that counts as a group, and you would look to the little chart.
The chart.
Yes, because not only do you get points, so you get a couple of points for that, right? Mm-hmm. Two strawberries, 2 points. Why not? It's not rocket science.
That's the moment you place your tile.
The moment you place it on your turn. But then you will also look at the chart. This is where the game gets a little bit fruity. For a game that's not meant to be a pun.
But it was,
and I'm apologize for that. Each player has these little tokens that they can play out onto this chart. Mm-hmm. Let's just say I score 3 strawberries. I look at this chart. Has anybody scored 3 on the strawberry track? And if they haven't, I put my little token there.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the game, I'm going to get points for having the highest values on these charts.
Okay.
So it means, let's just say I do 3 strawberries. And then on your turn, hey, I score 3 strawberries too. What happens? You get to go on the 2 because I'm in the 3 slot,
which means
I've pipped you to the post by having the big collection of strawberries once. Does it matter if I have 5 strawberries visible together at the end of the game? No. So at the point at which you score it, you put a token on there.
Okay.
And then at the end of the game, you're going to score points based on how high you manage to get on these charts. And there's so many different types of fruits and vegetables in this game. I can't remember how many exactly.
But there's loads.
I'm going to go on a limb and say 10 to 12.
Wow.
So like,
tons.
We had like dragon fruit. And I don't think anyone touched that stuff. No one was scoring dragon fruit.
I see.
But there was a hot fight for the strawberries. Uh-huh. Onions became contested at one point. And then, you know, you had some people just on the side with their apples or whatever, lemons, scoring happily on their own.
This sounds quite solitary.
It is and it isn't.
Okay.
I think what kind of came to life with this game is that I've already kind of buried the lead a little here and saying about how like, oh, you might not have those strawberries covered. Mm-hmm. They might be covered at the end of the game because this is a game where you stack things vertically.
Yes.
And this is where the components do really shine in the fact that, yes, they kind of could have just been wooden dominoes, but the fact that these little baskets, which are like two little segments of chocolate, is the best way to describe it, they do slot in really nicely and stack really happily when you start building up.
Right.
Again, You can always cover stuff up as long as you have one of the two sides of the domino is matching the thing that goes on, but you get bonus points in the event that you manage to double it. So if you have two edges of a thing where you go, okay, I've got some blueberries in that one and some strawberries in this, if I can put a blueberry strawberry over the top of it, then wham, you immediately get some bonus points for just doing a perfect cover.
Okay.
So you're trying to build out, fill out your grid, and then start building on top of it. Mm-hmm. In a way which allows you to be getting bonus points all the time, but also getting these large numbers of connected squares of one type visible top down so that you can take that scoring thing and then move on.
I see.
The point where the game becomes less solitary is the fact that you have a sense from early in the game what other people are doing. Mm-hmm. And you can look at it and you can go, you know what? No one else is doing onions. I've got my 5 onion on the board there. I'm going to start covering up my onions so I can score something else.
Right.
And then looking around and trying to keep an eye on whether or not that's a good idea.
That feels like something that would shine in a smaller player count game.
We played it with 4. Okay. And again, an advantage of the fact that this game has big, colorful plastic pieces. It's very readable.
Yeah, okay.
Or you can also see, because other people are probably creeping up the scoreboards as they do it. Mm-hmm. So I was on like 5 strawberries and then somebody was like, oh, they've got 3 strawberries. And I'm like, okay, they've scored 3. And you can look over and get a sense of like, are they
gunning for my prize?
Are they aiming to get 6 strawberries?
Are they knocking me off the leaderboard of the Donkey Kong arcade machine?
Right. And sometimes you look at what they're doing and you don't know, but you can look what they're doing and go, I don't think they are. No. Because like, see that they've like stacked up vertically next to it with
papaya.
Why not? I can't remember what all the real fruits are, but it's a good selection. Papaya. Or lemons. And you
oranges.
Go, all right, well, maybe they are going to make a big wadge of strawberries.
But, okay.
But I don't think they are. And that was where I thought the game became really interesting, because it became about like not just trying to get the maximum points on a turn-by-turn basis by like efficiently placing things that are setting things up so that you could get these extra points for perfectly laying tiles atop mm-hmm. two things that were aligned, but also having a sense of trying to be sneaky and trying to be like, all right, I'm going to go and get that score point and then I'm going to pivot. Mm. Because the hand you had was so restrictive of like you get to draw one, discard one, it meant you might end up just slowly amassing a large collection of lemons. And you think, well, it just it doesn't make sense not to score these lemons because I'm probably going to have to play them at some point anyway. So what do I start to trash? And trying to make those predictions based on the distribution as well, like being able to look across the board and be like, well, there's quite a lot of like lemons out there, kind of.
What's the chance of me getting one? Yeah.
I don't think anyone else is going to get enough to like catch up.
I see.
Honestly, it was crunchy and juicy. It was like, it was way more satisfying than I thought. Like a nice fruit.
Apple.
Like a fruit.
Oh.
Imagine that. Like a market basket. I also enjoyed the fact that you had all of this veg. Thematically, it was quite fun because you would just have tiles. Everyone had a tile or two in their hand that they just didn't want.
Right. Yeah.
And you were kind of just ignoring and hoping that each time when you drew a new one, you were going to get something you could immediately use because your hand was just garbage.
Please, dear God, I'm so sick of looking at onions.
But I just love the idea of you running these market stalls and then like someone's like, what are those baskets you got behind the curtain? You're like, don't worry about it.
Talk about the leaks.
Yeah, it's like, I got a lot of onions and I don't. They're really old. And I was like, your market's so good. It's like, don't look in the back.
Don't look at the back.
That was fun. And I really enjoyed like how bitey and competitive it could get for like trying to work out whether or not it was worth fighting other people for those top slots, because the points you got were pretty big for being like number one. And again, it wasn't friendly with ties. So, you know, the one thing I wasn't sure about, if I'm honest, was again, came down to the components. Like,
sure.
It wasn't so much the plastic use. Like, I'm kind of fine with that if it works, but it had a kind of like sheen to it that was just a bit tacky. I felt like there was
kind of too children's toy like, maybe.
Yeah, it was sort of sweet shoppy, you know.
Right.
They were a little bit shiny and smooth, and the strawberries particularly looked like a kind of like, I don't know, like a bowl of viscera or something. It was a something, you know. Fruit isn't that shiny. You know, fruit has a sort of mattness to it. There's a sheen.
God, even on the cover, they're like looking absolutely luminescent.
And I feel like if the theme was like bag, like buckets of sweets, then I'd be like, cool. But there's something about the merging of the theme of it being fresh fruit and vegetables and this like quite like bright, clean, plasticky look that just feels a bit off.
It's very strange how all of the fruit is kind of surrounded by itself in a like a sort of colorful mush of the same color. It's like the bananas are kind of embedded in a sort of yellow plastic bed of gunk.
Yeah,
and that goes for all of them.
Yeah, and it's like the attempt to give them texture, I think, to give the sense of the fruit, just creates more edges for shine to exist that just it creates a kind of plasticky sickness feel.
Yeah, I can definitely see that looking at it. I think that it's the kind of game where, as you say, with the nice stackable little crates, it feels like the kind of game where some plastic use is somewhat warranted because it locks 100%. Together nicely. And, it's very tactile.
I would say
but
it was
the colors
a game,
are just...
I didn't like the look of it at all. When I opened the box, I was like, I kind of feel like the aesthetic that the plastic in this game creates is pretty ugly.
Yeah.
And I went into the game expecting to really dislike it because of that. So all I'd say is like, I was really pleasantly surprised. I came away from it being like, I really like that actually, which I think is really impressive that it turned me around on it so much.
Because you didn't like the look of it.
Having said that, I think there probably could have been different production choices which would have made a game that I thought was...
good and looks good.
Yeah. Not even like saying it shouldn't have been plastic. Like, I think it could have been plastic. I just think that like something didn't quite shake out perfectly to fit the aesthetic that I would have liked.
That. Matt, I would like to tell you about a game that I think looks really good, but I didn't think it played very well.
Oh, no.
You see, it's an inversion of your Market Fresh.
That's the most upsetting combination.
Yeah, it is slightly more upsetting. This is a game called Echoes of Emperors, which on BoardGameGeek does not have a listed designer, just a publisher, Volkaban Studio.
Are you sure this wasn't one of your weird dreams?
It kind of feels like a weird dream.
Well,
like
let's find out just how much sex there is in the description of this game.
This is a medieval themed sex game.
I was going to say, what are you wearing in this game?
No, it is a sort of grid-based strategy war game type thing where you... You know what? The best way to describe this is kind of take a bit of a shortcut. It has Age of Empires vibes.
Ooh.
You start with a little sort of central castle on your side of the board, and the enemy will start with a little castle on their side of the board. There is a...
What could go wrong?
Indeed. War, Matt. War could go wrong, and it will happen immediately. Because what you're going to be doing is you're going to be sending out your little soldiers across this square board. It's a tile-based board, and each tile has four sort of spaces on it. It's like a big grid, and you're going to send out your little soldiers across this board to take spaces, to build little camps that are going to get you resources, and ultimately you will win by taking out your opponent's big castle on the other side, which is a bunch of health points that you'll reduce by whacking it.
Yeah, this has big, like, 90s RTS vibes.
Yep, and I think that's exactly what it's going for, honestly. Like, it's what it feels like to play, and the way that the actual game is structured is very straightforward. You are going to move out your little troops, you're going to take actions with them on the board, and then you're going to deploy more troops from your hand of cards. You have this hand which contains a bunch of cards that will either be unit cards that will, when you play them, they will get a corresponding piece that you put out onto the board to say, this is my archer, for example, and you will place out your little archer on the board, or they will be upgrades for existing troops. So you could give your footman a little shield, for example.
There's no crime in it.
And you're going to use these combinations of cards and upgrades to create a fighting force that will slowly trundle across the land and mess up your opponent. Mm. And some of the cards are more expensive than others, which means you need to place little encampments that are going to mine you some gold or get you some meat or lumber. And then you're going to build little garrisons that will let you field more units, etc., etc. You know, you've played a game like this on your video computer.
I have. And I'm getting flashbacks to playing Command & Conquer as a child and wondering why, you know, looking back, it seems really messed up that all of those games, when you played them in multiplayer, you couldn't win the game until you'd eradicated every single last troop.
Last drop.
And you could often annoy your opponent if you were a bad loser, as I often was as a child.
By building one little house?
Just building like one little jetpack guy and like flying into the corner of the map where like it couldn't be found until eventually they would send one helicopter and shoot it. And he'd be like, they won.
Eventually.
Just silly.
Yeah. It has that kind of energy, and I think that there's some parts of it that I really like. I really like how tactical it can be, where you have this hand of cards that will give you access to different unit types, but you don't know what that hand is going to look like, and you have to very much play around it. You just kind of build your strategy on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of different factions that you can play as, which have slightly different decks of cards. They have a sort of global ability that's always in play. I think I was playing as the Scots. I could be wrong. citation needed for Echoes of Emperors experts out there. But they had this whole thing where they had sort of peasantry units.
This is coming really back to Big Dream Energy. I think I was Scottish.
For a brief time on a Friday, I was Scottish and I was fielding an army of peasants and I was invading a castle.
Oh, I hate those dreams.
Every week. But yeah, I kind of built out this like very weak, but very like... they hit hard, but they were very puny. Mm. So they would whack someone in the head and then they would immediately cave as soon as they came into contact with the enemy, which I thought was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I liked all that stuff. I liked how defined the factions felt. I liked how tactical building out your force was. I think maybe my problem with it is it just felt a little glacial to play. It reminded me a lot of Bloodstones, which I think we talked about on the podcast quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
A Martin Wallace area control game, which was very much about sort of creating and maintaining a front. It was a lot of like slow wars of attrition.
Which we all do daily.
And it was just, I think that's kind of part of the intention here with this game, is that it's meant to be kind of the slow play. Your tactics are meant to kind of bore out over multiple rounds. But for me, at least, I just found it a little tedious, maybe. Mm. That seems very harsh. But I struggle with it a little bit. I don't know. I think it's a really unique design and will definitely find an audience in the people that are craving that kind of old school PC strategy game, but on the tabletop. But for me, at least, I think I wanted something a little snappier.
You know, I still think it's fiddly, but one of the games I played recently was Roads and Boats. I played that again. And like, I really do feel like too many games are still sleeping on the turn system for that game.
Right.
Like, it was a little arcane and it probably could have been smoother, but the whole system of being like, yeah, well, like, it's simultaneous until it isn't.
Yeah.
Like, especially when you have games like this where like, you're building a thing and you're not, for the first two turns, maybe you're not anywhere near each other.
Yeah, it feels like it almost needs like an advanced setup that gets you into the fray.
Yeah, either that or just be like, just for the until like you actually have any kind of conflict for anything, just like each round is simultaneous.
Yeah, we'll just go wild.
Like, why not? Like, why not?
And I think that like something that I've just remembered that kind of compounds the feeling of this game just being a little more sluggish than I'd like it to be is the fact that all of these cards have unique attack and defense and movement values, but all that information is stored over on your opponent's side of the table.
Mm.
So constantly you're going up against someone's like warrior that you can see in a clearing and you're like, oh, but I can't exactly remember how strong that troop is. Can you please read it out for me? And it's all those little tiny checks and balances that just create this game that's a little more sluggish than I think it needs to be.
Yeah. Next up, we have Fliptoons, and this is a game by Jordi Adan and Renata Simoes, published by Thunderworks Games, and it is a very cool little deck-building game that somehow passed me by. I think there's a new version of it coming soon, and I think I played the original version.
Coming toon.
Hey! But I was delighted by this. It has an art style which is very akin to that kind of like, Cuphead, like...
Yeah. Rubber Hose.
Before Rubber... What?
Steamboat William.
That's the one.
Do you know what Rubber... You know Rubber Hose. It's when they have the long arms
and
the little mittens.
Oh, yeah.
Looks like you could stretch them.
Old schooly, cartoon vibes.
Yeah.
Minus the racism, which is not present in Fliptoons because it's mostly just fun animals. In fact, it's all just fun animals. Anthropomorphic aminals. Oh, God.
He's losing his mind.
I'm losing my mind. I've got to get these jelly beans out of my brain before I explode. Now, this game has a little twist in it, in the fact that when you are playing this game, you have your little deck of cards.
Oh, yeah.
And you are going to be flipping out six cards into a grid in front of you.
Okie dokes.
And that is your hand for the turn.
I see. Right?
And so you've done it. Like, there's no playing. It's just a case of, like, you flip it all over, you activate any effects, and then you've got some money from that.
Like an auto battle.
Yeah. So let's just say I flip over and I've got six cards that have a one in the corner. That's six money. Mm-hmm. Then we take it in turns to buy stuff from the shop.
Right.
And there's a deck of cards with better animals because we'll have a starting deck, which is kind of bunk.
Better animals?
Better animals, yes.
Like what?
Well, better animals than like a worm and a bug.
Okay, is that what you start with? Yeah, just six worms, two bugs,
some pretty basic
a mosquito.
Stuff. Yeah, like some pretty basic stuff. And then you've got things like, I don't know, like a monkey.
Wow,
a dog.
That's an advanced animal.
A dog holding a hot dog.
Yeah, I'm looking at the dog holding a hot dog and I don't really know how I'm going to feel about it.
No, that's fair. That's fair. You've got, I think, a bull. You've got like different tiers of animals.
Is and
they,
dog
they
of
range
dog?
From like a value of like one to a value of like 20, 25, I think.
Okay.
The way the game works, though, is you have different price points for each of the cards in the shop, mm-hmm. which means like the highest value card in the shop is always going to cost like a whole bunch, like 15 coins. The lowest one is going to cost like two,
right.
everywhere in between. But they just get put in order of value, which means some rounds the shop is super juicy, right? And you'll be like, wow, I can get like a... like 20 value card for like 12.
I can get an ostrich for 3?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think ostrich might actually be worth exactly 3. I might be wrong on that, but in that case, that's wild that you did that. Anyway, the way it can work, though, is you have like a whole shop of junk. And
okay.
It's like no one's going to pay 12 bucks for
that very same ostrich.
For like a crab ostrich. Are you mad? That's not business. So you buy stuff from the shop with the money, the fictional money that you hold in your head, like Quacks of Quedlinburg style.
Dominion style.
Yep. And then you just take that card, you put it into your deck. Mm-hmm. And then you take all your cards and you put them back into your deck. But here's the rub.
I'm ready.
There's no draw pile. There's no discard.
Oh.
You just shuffle your whole deck and you deal out 6 cards.
Oh, okay. Weird.
So it's the deck, but it's not.
It's like a bag builder.
Yeah, it's like a bag deck.
We've come back around to talk about Quacks of Quedlinburg.
I know. And that means that, yeah, you are basically then like drawing from your deck. So you very immediately you have like some interesting incentives in terms of like, that's the very basic thing of it. Like of when you have a card come out, that value on the card is the value of spending that you have for the next round in the shop. But also the cards have abilities and they do things. Yeah. They let you trash other cards. Mm. Some cards do a thing where you draw the card and it immediately tells you to draw another card and do something with it.
So which maybe doesn't it's like, count to your...
Doesn't
six
count
cards?
To your six, no. So you can have things that allow you to stack up cards. So you've got like 9 cards at the end instead of 6. You've got some spicy cards. One of the cards I had, I think it was a camel or something. I don't know. I'm probably wrong about animals. I had a card that every time I drew it, I would then draw another card and then immediately discard that. Like I lose it, like burn it from my deck.
Ah.
So again, it's like spicy.
The gambling camel.
But if you've got a lot of stuff in it.
You've got a lot of junk.
And then having the ability to do these things and combo stuff together. There was also an element of working around the table. The dog with the hot dog, for example.
Don't make me think about that dog.
Rubbish on their own, right? But if there are other dogs around, either in other people's tableaus or in the shop, then you get more points.
Like a dog stock market.
Yes. Yeah. So you'd be like, who's going into dog?
If everyone's investing in dog.
Has anyone done dog this time?
Then I will too.
And it was great. When everyone had a dog, you're like, you'd just be like, any dogs? Any dogs? And someone would be like, I got a dog. And you'd be like, hey.
Yeah, dog and brothers.
It kind of created that nice moment where you were like high-fiving people at different times.
Okay.
And then that, you know, the classic thing of like, you know, I've got this card, but as long as I have the most, then I get the bonus. But then someone else is doing it and you're like, what are you doing?
Stay away from my
gorillas, camels. I can't remember. It's all a blur to
me. So many animals.
The thing that you need to know is that the animals were all very charming and fun. Mm-hmm. The ways that you could be manipulating your own like draw pile, your own deck, and also like the shop cards that allow you to like nuke the shop. Mm-hmm. Lots of very fun stuff going on here. And a lot of simplicity as well. Like, you know, we talked about Quacks, right? Quacks has that slight like complexity because it is a game that's like, you know, about building up points and money at the same time. This kind of just has pure simplicity of the game ends, I think, when somebody has a total value of cards in their shop that's like 30.
Right. Okay.
So in their hand, sorry. Yeah. So basically you keep playing until somebody has a round where they go, okay, I've got more money than this value.
Okay. Interesting.
But they don't win the game.
Oh.
Again, interesting.
Hmm.
What happens then is they get to take a little token that gets them like some bonus points, but then you play one more round and that round is the final round. Mm-hmm. So you might be the player who activates the end of the game, but you might not win. You've got a better chance of winning now because you get this like bonus point marker, but it creates a little bit of a squeaky bum atmosphere of going, okay, I just had a really good round, but now I don't know whether or not I'm going to be able to have the same round
again.
Yeah,
it smooths out maybe like the spikier decks. It's like all about just like, it's about, can you consistently pull a high scoring
hand? And so there is that element of the deck building then of like, of you having to make sure that your deck is like the whole thing of like, oh, but each time it's random. The game is kind of like stopping that. The game is ensuring that you have a system so you can reliably like either have a deck that is just the same six cards each time, yeah, and then you know exactly what your turn's going to be. Or I think mine had an element of risk to it, and I got really screwed over in the last round because I had more cards, but I had so many cards that were like, and then mm-hmm. play another card, that I was like mostly consistently really good. And then in the last round, just didn't draw the cards I needed. Mm-hmm. Like all the cards that were the grease in the engine just got shuffled to the bottom in a way that meant I spluttered out hard in the end, which was really, really satisfying. Right. Like it had a really fun shape to it. Mm-hmm. It was very light. And the fact that you weren't dealing with any like tracking scores or anything like that, it was very turn by turn, play by play. Had lots of room for fun little strategies within it. Very cool.
This sounds a little bit like the sort of peppy and light and breezy antidote to something like Dark Pact, which I covered recently and you've played as well.
Yeah.
It's like a deck building game that has all this like mad combo stuff where you're trying to create this like engine and it's trying to be, you know, look at the number go up, look at all that kind of stuff. But maybe this is a little more contained and snappy because it's simultaneous as well.
Yes, it is definitely contained and snappy. Like, it doesn't, like, the game doesn't last very long. It's pretty quick to play. Mm-hmm. But also, like, it doesn't get mad. Like, you don't have like crazy stacking. It's more like you have a satisfying turn. Like, if you get like to play eight cards instead of six, that's a pretty great turn.
Right. Okay. So like, it's kind of more like contained than something.
Yeah. It's more about like trying to hone the deck you have to like exist within the chaos, yeah, rather than having this big like kind of.
It sounds a bit like Challengers. If you ever played that, they were both.
No, I didn't.
I didn't love that game when I first played it, but I got to play it in like a quasi tournament setting recently.
Oh yeah.
Where we played like a bunch of it and I found it really like weirdly satisfying. We might have to revisit that one.
Yeah, interesting. But yeah, I was really glad to play this one because it was just peppy, fun, immediate.
I want to check it out.
And yeah,
I want to check it out big style.
It's really cool.
Let me look at that.
Really cool.
Sticking with the theme of flipping, Matt, I'm going to tell you about Flip Pick Towers. Matt is giving me a middle finger.
I flipped him off.
He's flipping me off.
Don't tell them that.
Live
they,
on the
they can't
pod.
Know we're rude.
This isn't a game about that, Matt. It's a game about building a magical tower.
It's a magical tower. We're on our way there. There's wizards in top and wizards in the bottom. It's called Magical Tower.
It's not called Magical Towers. It's called Flip Pick Towers.
That was an original song copyright.
One of the
I'm almost
the
crying
day.
Because I'm so embarrassed. I'm tearing up.
One of the pub quiz questions the other day was, what was the name of the Toys R Us mascot? Do you remember?
Jeffrey.
Correct.
There's millions of Jeffreys.
Ding, 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 ding.
All under one roof. Doesn't make any sense. It's haunted me forever. I was always like, maybe...
Millions of Jeffreys all under one
Maybe like at one point, like the Jeffrey sticker represented like a low price promise or something. And that, might, but I've not...
Oh.
I don't know why. This is me trying to like squish some sense into it.
Yeah.
I don't think it made any sense.
It's not such a good tagline in the Epstein era. Flip Pick Towers is a game designed by Rob Fisher and Adam Porter with art by Beatrix Papp and published by Osprey Games.
Mm.
And it's a really cute little roll and write. This is a little quick recommendation for this game. If you are the kind of person who likes your roll and writes to have like that kind of a little bit of artistic expression in them. You know, we talk about roll and writes
right.
being fun when yep. you get to specifically like put a bit of creative flair into it,
yep.
when you get to exist in that imaginative space rather than just ticking
but
boxes.
But not too much. It's
not
a really fine... And I think that's why I like Welcome To so much, is because it simply said, hey, draw a circle, do a line, cross something out,
yep.
fill something in. But then on paper, like cartographers, you just draw loads of trees. But like after I've drawn three trees, I'm done.
Really?
I don't want to draw all these trees.
I quite like cartographers for that reason. Like I actually enjoy doodling all the trees. I think it depends on how many trees you're putting into each square.
That's true.
You're putting three trees in each square, you have to fill in 10 squares. That's like 900 trees.
Yeah, they just become very quickly like clouds on sticks for
this
me.
Is true.
But
yeah.
like but no, a little bit of creative flair.
I
love
it.
You
can see the moment where you start to lose interest.
Exactly.
Like
it's yeah. like when it's like a child drawing a cloud, right? The first two like bits are perfect.
Oh, wow.
And then it just becomes like a crap wiggle.
Mess. Yep. Flip Pick Towers is one of those games. It's one of those games where you get to draw something nice while you play your roll and write. I keep calling it a roll and write. It's a flip and write because it's called Flip Pick Towers.
I think we need like another like there's the difference between a roll and write and a flip and write and a flip and fill.
We should just call them and write games.
Yeah, yeah. Something. I feel like they're all in one banner under one thing.
So there's all under one roof, if you will.
All right, Jeffrey Games. We're calling them Jeffrey Games.
So the way this works is real simple. You're going to flip and you're going to pick. You're going to flip three cards off the top of the deck and you're going to pick one to draw onto your little grid in front of you. At the start of the game, you have four or five little stubby beginnings of towers, and mostly what you're going to be drawing early on are foundations, which are little like blocky bits of castle that you'll stick on top of these foundations and build them taller and taller.
Oh, that's nice.
However, they have a stability value, and the stability must go from high to low. So it's got a little bit of that welcome to thing where like, oh, am I going to start my tower on a six? That doesn't leave much like headroom for me to build a nice tall one.
Yeah.
Am I going to jump from a nine all the way down to a five? That seems a little crazy.
Yeah.
But then there are ways of subverting that. Like you can have little magical creatures that will come along during the game that will let you like mess around with the stability rules. But where this game really shines...
I do not trust goblins that are going to offer to help me mess around with the stability of my magical tower.
This goblin architect is promising that he can build this beautiful foundation on top of a roof.
You get a quote and you're like, oh, this pixie told me they could do it for half the price. It's like, well, then I'm not getting involved with that.
You're getting scammed.
Yeah, like that's... Have you never read a fairy tale in your life?
The way that this game really starts to shine, though, is in all of these specific little features that you can add to your castle. So you can add little bridges that go in between the little foundations. Mm-hmm. So you have these nice tall towers with these little hanging bridges along them. You can get banners, which kind of flow down your tower. So you need to make sure you've got enough room for that. You've got beanstalks that grow up, and maybe you want to make sure they don't clash with the little banners that you're putting down. There's little roofs.
I'm fascinating now. Like, what? I'm fascinating now. What is the
point?
The canvas that you're working with here. Like, is it like things you're filling in, or is it like a grid?
It's a grid that has little towers at the bottom,
and it shows you how big these pieces are.
Yeah.
So you know, like, but then within that, the banner you can draw what you like, but it has to have a certain number of spaces or
it's
gaps
like
free.
Each of the foundations just take up like a grid square, basically. Okay. And you know that the banners do two grid squares, but you can draw the banner however you want.
Of course.
And then within, you can also like put little windows on things, and you can have roofs that kind of cap off the tops of your foundations. And if you do them first, you get to put three flags on top of your little roof. If you do it second, you only get two flags. If you do it last, you just get one little flag. And then you also have things that you can keep within each of these little rooms. So you can have kings and queens and princesses, which you write their little letter and you put a crown on it to show that they live in there.
Nice.
And they've got specific scoring conditions. And it's just really very gentle and very fun and very simple. It's a little long. You have to do two full cycles of this deck. And we found by the end of it, we had the cartographer's problem of, wow, I've drawn a lot of little tiny pieces of castle today. I think I've had enough.
Yeah.
But there's something really charming about it. I don't think it's going to necessarily blow your socks off. Mm. It's not revolutionizing the Jeffrey space.
The problem is now you have to include all the nonsense and my stupid little terrible song about Toys R Us, because otherwise none of this makes any sense.
It's locked in forever, unfortunately.
It's canon, never mind.
But it's really delightful. I found it very sweet. It's something that does Roll and Writes sort of really well, I think. It knows that the satisfying part of these games is often not like the raw, you know, getting the pieces in order. It's all about like how you ornament them and draw them. And
I think it's about making something look nice.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
And I feel that like whenever I've played, I think we talked about this a bunch, but like whenever I played Railroad Ink and played with the water expansion, wetness, I always liked the idea of that, because making a big pond in the middle of the thing is just so satisfying.
It is.
But it's so sad when you end up having these weird like 90 degree angles at the edge of the pond because the game isn't quite flexible enough to allow you to both make something that scores you lots of points and let you make something that looks genuinely clean and beautiful. And that's fine, but it does always make me sad when I'm like,
There's something really interesting in the Railroad Tiles expansions. There's like, one of the things you can do is you can just like have your roads can just go like directly into water. And if they do that, then they link up on the other side, like how the lakes worked in Railroad Inc. But they included these little tiny like harbor things that have no gameplay impact whatsoever, but you just cap your roads with them whenever they run into water just to make them look a little nicer.
Yeah.
And I think that it means that you can do those things that are like gameplay efficient, but not aesthetically efficient.
Yes.
But now they are aesthetically efficient because you put a little cap on it and you're like, oh, that's cute.
My terrible idea is let's do a thing where before you announce the final scoring, every player can affect one space in a way that they want. But for every space they change, they lose a point.
No,
just to make their map look prettier.
How
confident are you that you're
going
to win?
I thought you were going a different way and saying that everyone should look at everyone's thing and you should vote on which you think is the most aesthetic.
Well, that's a good idea as well.
That would be kind of wicked.
That's like the kind of like, you know, the Galaxy Trucker style, like now check each other's work, yeah. I think is a
mechanic. The secret best rule of that game,
It is. And like, I think that there's definitely an element of like, secretly look to the person to your left and right and like give them a score.
Give them a ranking on how beautiful you think the thing is. Or you could even pitch it. You could say, hey, look, here's my beautiful ring road in the middle of my... I'm going to do that. I'm going to have 5 points in every Railroad Tiles game for whoever designed the best look. Not even necessarily best looking, but the one that is the most fun.
The one that people like the most.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
There's usually a correct answer with that.
Yeah, exactly.
You look at it and you go, that's bonkers what you've done there.
When I played it with my friend a while ago, he decided to make Man Town, where he refused to place any cars or trains, just little red dudes. This is a whole gameplay strategy. He could place them. He decided not to because of Man Town.
Okay, so how did they score?
Terribly.
Yeah, no fair.
But I would have given them the 5 points for best theme.
You've got to play in the space.
Flip Pick Towers, love a little roll and write. Gives you a lot of nice little player expression to draw things how you want. It's a little too long, but I think it's quite nice.
Nice.
Yeah. And that is the end of this week's episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. Thank you very much for listening to our brains firing off all of these little games that we had nibbling around the corners of our cerebellum.
Yeah, I've got all those jelly beans out. They popped out through my nose because it's connected to the brain.
Is that true?
Well, I know it's connected to the brain because the ancient Egyptians used to fork out brains through the nose, but really thinking about it, that doesn't necessarily mean it's connected.
They did used to hook your brains out through your nose.
It just means it's an easy hole to poke through.
That can't have been like a clean...
I'm thinking about it now. There's lots of information you absorb as a child from school that you don't really think about.
They probably liquefied the brain. Or they just made an absolute mess of the nose.
I think today they probably use one of those things you use to froth milk for a cappuccino, one of those little sticks.
Yeah.
Just whack that up the nose.
In Egypt today, they
blend it a little bit.
They turn your brain into a nice smooth foam and then slurp it out.
Froth it up.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.